Ready to do this thing?
Are we rolling?
Oh, yeah. I think we're rolling. Here we go. It's really loud. Hello and welcome to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. Today's episode brought to you by The Big Bang.
Boom.
Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the InnerTubes, and from our other award-winning podcast, Ardent Atheist. You can find links to our guest website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, subscribe to our premium 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email at skepticallyyours.net.
If you'd like to take part in a live chat moderated by Joe Swam, go to skepticallyyours.net/live and chat us up right now.
And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast for free, and write a review. Help us get in the top 10. You may also go to Ustream and subscribe to our vodcast, or go to skepticallyyours.net/premium and subscribe to our premium ad-free content for a measly $10 per year.
Go subscribe. Trigger warning.
What trigger warning are you warning them of?
Any trigger.
That's not how a trigger warning works.
We're probably going to make rape jokes, right?
Most likely.
Trigger warning.
Cut that out.
Rape.
No one's raping you.
I know, but I didn't want the trigger warning to go to waste.
Stop it. If you're a listener who's ever been duped by anything that's been debunked on Snopes, welcome. Your ordeal is over.
Butt rape.
We're coming to you live from the second floor of the fabulous John Lovitz Comedy Club on the GoCast Network, high atop the hill of Universal City Walk in sunny Universal City, California.
Why won't anybody rape you?
I'm sure I do not know. In the Universal City tonight, we have Cole Parker, Barbara Drescher, and name is pronounced Ani, right? Okay, I'm going to do this right. Ani Aharonian. God damn it, I did that. Ani Aharonian. I'm glad we have extra music to cover my
sure.
fuck up here. You know these ladies from the World of Reason.
Sorry, Cole.
Sorry, Cole. Sorry. We're outnumbered, you and me, today. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Get her closer to that mic.
Hello.
Yeah,
Ani, pull that all the way up to you.
There you go.
I don't know why I didn't say that before we started.
Trigger warning.
We the trigger warning thing. Man, listen, I jumped all over this thing when I saw Barbara, you and I were on the same thread somewhere, and the trigger warning thing came up. And you kind of called it bullshit. And I think you took it back later a little bit. But I want to talk more about that. It seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like you pulled that thread where you said that it was kind of, what'd you call it? Do you think the whole trigger warning thing is bullshit, Barbara?
It defined bullshit.
I know, right? Listen, I think you have to define triggers. I mean,
yeah.
First of all, that's my problem with the whole trigger warning thing. I think that trigger warnings are just another form of social censorship, a way to label some people as. What do they always call me?
A jag-off.
Yeah, a jag-off.
You've been promoted.
I have been promoted, Cole. I think that it tends to be something that, at least in my circles, that is used to suggest that I'm not caring enough or someone's not caring mm-hmm. enough. And it's an idea. I think it was a good idea that's now starting to be badly misused by some people. That's my problem with the whole trigger warning thing. It's a really complex thing.
So, like, trigger warning Emery, just in case you want to disagree, because you're going to disagree with Emery.
Listen, my name is a fucking trigger warning, okay? I don't understand why anybody gets mad when they go to a party and Andy Dick is there.
Trigger warning for Andy Dick.
He's going to grab your balls. He's going to grab your... He's Andy fucking Dick, okay? So don't be an asshole and call... It's kind of like, I don't know, did you ever watch Andy Griffith? Remember the drunk guy on Andy Griffith, the town drunk? What was his name? Does anybody...
Drunky McGillicuddy.
No, he had a... goddamn it. Any idea? Nobody knows this?
Somebody in the chat room's gone.
Yeah,
there.
Come on. Anyway,
come on, Joe.
There was a guy on that show who was the town drunk. And he was going to get drunk and he was going to say stupid shit and he was going to end up thrown overnight in jail by Andy. And that was just part of the deal. You know what I mean? And if you go to a party and Andy Dick doesn't grab your junk, it wasn't a good party that had Andy Dick there. I don't understand it. So... I think some things are a given. We do a trigger warning at the top of Ardent Atheist, for example.
We don't call it that, though.
It's an invitation to not listen if you're offended by things.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
If you don't like facts, you can leave.
Not just facts. I'm going to add that to the top of this show, man. That's really nice. If I wish I could remember what the verbiage is. You know what? I can just open the damn thing. Couldn't I? I could do that.
If you've ever been offended by anything in your life,
if you've ever been,
get a sledgehammer and smash your computer now.
This show has no restrictions on language or content, and certainly has nothing for you, and then we change that up. So we do a kind of invitation to not listen if you're offended by things.
Otis Campbell.
Otis was the drunk from Andy Griffith's show. I'd love to have Andy Dick on our show. Although he's been on our show once before. He's actually a Christian. He was an ardent atheist. He's actually a Christian, believe it or not. And a really sweet guy. I mean, crazy sweet guy. The minute he starts drinking or taking any kind of drugs,
he starts reaching
for your cock. That's all it is. That's what happens. And
is that legal?
Depends
on the setting.
Okay, yeah.
Let me say it this way. Andy, if you're at my house, it's not only legal, it's mandatory.
Nice.
If Andy Dick is invited to my place or I'm having lunch with Andy Dick, I'm going to be disappointed if he doesn't reach for my cock.
That's how I feel.
Disappointed.
Yeah,
disappointed.
Right.
You're damn right.
Why don't you get like a little pair of like child's gloves and like fill them out with some plasticine or something? Because his hands are quite small. You could recreate the experience.
I don't know.
When he's not there, couldn't you?
It's not the same if it's just me groping. It's not the same.
Just pretend.
I do that every day. I don't need.
Having a David Carradine to your cell phone.
So, yeah, I Heather doesn't agree with me, by the way. Heather does not. She thinks trigger warnings are good. She thinks they serve a purpose. She thinks they should be in place, don't you?
I think most trigger warnings could serve a purpose if you're not misusing it, like you said.
Yeah.
So, and you said something early that you said, I'm not going to say this on the show, but you need to.
I said I wasn't going to say it on the show.
Yeah, but
what
I think you should.
What part of I'm not going to say it on the show?
Because I was talking about how I didn't want to listen.
My opinion is this. You suffer from, I think, post-traumatic stress.
I do.
You do. Have you been diagnosed with that?
Yes.
Okay. So you've been diagnosed with
post-traumatic stress disorder.
PTSD. Stuff. Thank you. PTSD. So you've been diagnosed with it.
Yes.
And it's connected to a number of things?
Many things.
Okay. If you post something on Heather's Facebook wall, in her feed, if she sees something, vegetarians and vegans like to post these awful, awful videos of animals
and pictures
of animals being tortured and killed and maimed and destroyed and all that.
Or, you know,
I can't handle those either. I can't watch the commercials for, you know, like the Humane
Society. She's in the bedroom for an hour crying when she glances at it.
Hour,
10 minutes, 15? How long? Tell me how long.
It upset me greatly, and it was not just that today. It was a number of things today, and that just was the crown on the whole thing. You know what I mean? I was just like, I just don't need to see this right now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think my argument would be that, is that a trigger warning, or is that just a warning that you're about to see something that would upset a normal human being?
I mean, when I see that on my feed, I had started deleting people who post that kind of stuff all the time.
Because that's the way it ought to happen.
I don't want to see it. I want to have anything to do with it. But, you know, and then I started, getting off their feeds or not letting them.
Unsubscribing, unfollowing them,
things like that. So that's, I like what you said, how normal people
this is a difference. We're talking about something that is a normal reaction to something horrifying.
Yeah.
Okay, that some people have a higher tolerance for than others. I'm extremely sensitive. Like, I cry at commercials. I'm that bad. I'm horrible.
You can pretend like I cry at everything all the time. Well, I will always deny that fact.
Toy Story 3.
I didn't word that right, did I, Cole?
I think you did. I think you got away with it.
I worded it just
right. I mean, just so we can be clear, because I'd never heard of trigger warnings until today.
You haven't?
Nope. So if you're reading, for example, a newspaper or a magazine, you could have something, in a kind of subheading which warns you about the content, which you think the subheading would be enough to tell you what's going on. But does that not sort of make... If you require a trigger warning, does that not make having conversation with strangers impossible? If you're that sensitive, because...
Well, unless they're holding up pictures.
Well, no, honey. Herein lies the problem. Your version, Heather, of a trigger warning is not the same.
I know,
as mine, my sister's, my uncle's, my dad's, everybody else out there. It goes out into this ether of just there's no possible way.
And you're right. And you're right. It can happen in conversation. And then at that point, I say, I don't want to talk about that.
This is where actually Ani has uncovered, you know, some of the research on this that says
exactly. Barbara and Ani, both you do research in the field that this speaks to. Am I right?
I should qualify before we go any further and say that neither one of us are a clinical psychologist, so we're not therapists. We don't talk about therapy or treatment. I know enough about abnormal to teach a couple of undergrad classes.
You know enough about
it's
what?
It's a little more abnormal psychology, which would be something that you would need to get therapy for. But I'm not a clinical psychologist. I'm a cognitive psychologist, and Ani is so too. But our specialties are in related areas. Mine's in attention and decision-making and reason. And I've studied a number of other things because I've taught research methods, which means you end up studying everything. And Ani's a memory expert. So the kind of trigger warnings that they're talking about when you go to, say, a feminist blog and they have trigger warning rape, they're talking about triggering memories and anxiety that are attached to memories. And that's an interesting thing, that there's no real established concept that this actually happens this way.
I think I've heard people describe it very differently. I don't think there's a lot of research that describes exactly how it is. But I think the media represents that the experience is very much like reliving the original trauma, and I don't think that that's exactly how it is experienced. I think that there's like a stress response. There's that fight or flight. There's, you know, what should I do? Quickness of breath, heart rate, all of that stuff kicks
panic
in.
Panic attacks.
Panic attack, basically. Yeah. It's
physical
exactly what it is. It's
responses.
The physical stress response that takes place, but it doesn't necessarily have to be accompanied by these flashbacks and reliving. And I think that that's what a lot of people think of. And when they want to provide these trigger warnings, that's kind of what you want to prevent for somebody, not, I think, less so maybe just upsetting them a little bit.
Right.
Well, you said to me earlier that you said you think that I need to parse the...
My opinion is this.
Right.
So you're okay with me talking about
yes,
it?
Yes, I am.
All right, obviously. You're inviting me to talk about your personal... Okay. I think that the person who's suffering from these post-traumatic stresses need to get into therapy. They need to work through them. They need to parse this problem. They need to get to the bottom of the problem. However... they can do that, and stop trying to alter the world around them to suit their fucked up state. That's what I
think. What about during the process of that?
During the process of that?
Yeah.
You've had traumatic stress. Bad things have happened to you. While you work your way through that process, trying to get the New York Times not to show a picture of a kitty that's fucked up without giving you some warning before you scroll down the page ain't going to fucking help you get through this. In fact, in my opinion, it's only going to serve to create a culture.
Not that the New York Times would.
They do. The New York Times and other papers that, they have.
I've never read the New York Times.
You know.
Yeah, but you can have this about anything, though, couldn't you? You could have, like, a story about war, and they say, warning, this contains a story about war. You know, it actually depends
on what the hot button issue is.
Shouldn't tell you that? Shouldn't a title be somewhat descriptive and give you some idea of what you're reading?
Yeah,
but it's funny, what you were talking about is the rest of the world. We were equating it to bubble wrapping.
Yeah, I have a clinician friend who called it exactly that. She said it's sort of like they want people to bubble wrap the world for them.
Yeah.
Instead of bubble wrapping themselves.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And that she felt like that's not the way to deal with it. They almost need like a second parent to come in and say, well, no, we can't bubble wrap the world to protect you. You're going to have to work at it and get through it.
You have to figure out how to get through this. I feel that, listen, when somebody has been molested in their past, and that molestation is playing a role and or causing that person to control the actions of others, that molester, his actions are continuing to affect other people. And that's the problem. I'm talking from a place.
That's not the only problem, though. There's a real question about whether these are helpful or harmful.
Well, I want to see some data. Guess what? There isn't any.
Yeah,
actually, there is. There's plenty of data.
Really?
Yes. We don't. This kind of goes back to. There's several arguments that I've seen where people absolutely refuse to even talk about something unless it is applied research that is applied exactly to this one topic, and that's very difficult in this case because you can't trigger people purposefully and try to study them and see what happens. It's like poking people with a fork to study pain.
I could. I know how to freak Heather out.
You could, but
sorry.
I know how to punch out.
But we have plenty. I mean, mountains and mountains of research on things like priming and attention that all tell us one thing. And that is, when you put that word trigger warning up there, you're drawing attention to the very thing that the person's trying to avoid. And then there's a question, which is a question for a clinician, about whether or not they really should be avoiding it. That's a different issue. But for me, the myth part comes in that trigger warnings, the triggers, that word trigger just means that you have sparked something, right?
Right, right.
And
Or might.
Whether or not you've triggered something is one question. She was finding research that says that triggers actually don't tend to be central to the trauma itself.
Everything I've seen,
peripheral.
Listen, everything I've seen in my studies on this have shown that triggers tend to be completely unrelated to the trauma. And I bring that information to you from the West Wing. Okay, because that's where I get my information.
But then there's the question, a separate question as to whether trigger warnings help or hurt.
We're going to talk more about that right after this break. You're listening to Skeptically Yours on the GoCast Network, skepticallyyours.net, and available at the iTunes Store. More after this unavoidable interruption.
Good news, everyone.
We actually have a premium ad-free service. We do the show for 90 minutes, and you'll be able to listen to the live show and or download the first hour free from iTunes. The premium service will allow you to subscribe to the full 90-minute ad-free show. It's only $10 per year. If you want to support us, please go to skepticallyyours.net/premium and subscribe. If you need to shave your back, you got 2 minutes.
Hey, guys, this is Danny Trejo, and when I'm in Huntington Beach, I go to my favorite restaurant, The Second Floor. The Second Floor has my favorite food, and man, you have to see their colossal burger. You need a damn machete just to cut them. And they were just voted the best fusion art restaurant. Tattoo art from some of the biggest names like Jack Rudy and Rick Walters. Every Thursday night, art shows featuring legends to local artists come in, and you can meet them in person. You can buy the art right off the walls, and all sales go right to the artists. After 10 p.m. Thursday through Saturday, well-known DJs spinning an eclectic mix of music, and you've got to check out their late-night menu. Go visit them on the web. Check out their great menu, upcoming art shows, and your favorite DJ. Located at 126 Main Street, downtown Huntington Beach. Second Floor. I'll see you there.
How you doing? We're the Farley Brothers.
I'm John Farley.
I'm Kevin Farley.
And I'm Carissa Costa.
And we're Farley Brothers Radio.
Tuesdays at noon Pacific Central Time, Pacific Standard Time,
or whatever it is.
Pacific Standard.
Just tune in. To the GoCast Network.
And we also have tweeting at, where are we?
Farley Brothers Radio.
On the tweet.
And we're on the GoCast Network.
GoCast Network.
GoCast Network.
Buck Starr here, Greg Seitz, whatever my name is, Greg Buckstar Seitz, CEO of GoCast Network.
And I'm Gary Garver, formerly of, I don't even want to mention that asshole's name, from the GoCast Network, program director of the GoCast Network.
Weren't you on Journey?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Sammy Hagar, they say.
Sammy Hagar. And you know what? We got some sick new technology. You can check us out with Vidi.
What the hell's Vidi, Greg? I have no idea what that is.
Vidi is Instagram, Twitter combined for a great 15-second video experience where you'll see awesome clips and fun stuff.
Wow, I can't wait to check that out. Where do we go?
Vidi.com? I think so.
Okay, cool.
Before you hit fast forward, listen to this.
It's the big hot rockin', non-stoppin', less-talkin', boss-shockin', head-knockin', finger-poppin', yankin', crankin', hiney-spankin', wham-bam, thank you, ma'am, 50,000-watt blowtorch of rock and roll! That is the Dick and Darren Show.
Dick and Darren downloaded 185 episodes. It's pretty good for you. You'll like it. Up in your ear hole.
We're back on the GoCast Network.
And now back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with Cole Parker, Barbara Drescher, and Ani Aharonian.
perfect that time.
I did it!
Yeah.
Yay!
Did.
I don't have to write a song! You know what we're talking about?
No.
Prashanth Venkataramanajam. Say that 10 times at all.
No.
Slowly. He's a comic. Really funny cat. And he's been on the show. And the first time I had him on the show, I could not get his name right. I completely fucking butchered
it. What is it again?
Can't imagine why.
Yeah. Prashanth Venkataramanajam.
Oh, do you know what? I saw his name recently printed, and I saw it, and I just thought, that's a terrible name. He was looking at... What's his first name again?
Prashanth.
Prashanth, yeah. We thought we should be called Prashanth Venka. We were trying to shorten his name.
Yeah.
He does stuff like that. I mean, he definitely finds ways around the issue.
But you want audiences to remember your name.
Somebody
and be able
on
to
the,
pass it on to other people.
They'd remember that.
Somebody on the chat wants to hear the
song. Well, if they can pronounce it again, they will, yeah.
No, I mean... your version.
Or Venka.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it has like more connotations where I'm from than over here.
What do you mean?
No.
What's Venka mean?
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't realize.
I'm not sure I know. What are you talking about?
It's really, really close to wanker.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what you're hearing? Vanker? Vanker, wanker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His parents had a sense
of
humor.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Vanker, like a German wanker. All right, yeah.
We wrote a song specifically for... that purpose. I could not remember. I could not pronounce his name. And all day I practiced it because I'm kind of anal about names. I like to get them right when they're guests on my show. And I could not get his right. Before the end of the show, I will find that on my hard drive and we'll play that song for
like the
wall.
The song.
The wall wants to hear it. In fact, guess what?
He's a friend of the show, a comic you may know. He's named after his mum.
If it's too hard for you, split the name in two. It starts with a V and ends with an A. He'll do it in your bum. Try saying it when you come.
Oh, thank it to Ramanujam.
Maybe it's too long.
Oh, no.
It's long enough that I'm going to be hearing it in my head.
I know, right?
Thank you very much.
If you're trying to learn but can't, you can just call him Prashant.
Venkataramanajam.
If that one trips you up too, you can just call him Cecil.
I like that.
Venkataramanajam.
That's awesome.
That's Shelley Siegel. She did that song with us at the house when she was staying here. You know Shelley Siegel?
Possibly.
She's from Australia, and she does music. She sings really funny music. Skeptic music, atheist music.
The devil's music.
That's right.
The music of the devil. All right. You were talking before the break, Barbara. We were talking about how things that tend to be triggers aren't words like rape.
Yeah, well, it's hard to anticipate. People have triggers for anything that was related to the event. So the idea is that you've gone through this horribly awful thing that was harmful to you, or some injury came to you. And the adaptive thing to happen is to develop a fear for to notice the signs, the things that were present before the bad thing happened, so that you can anticipate it next time and prevent it.
Right.
And so that's the kinds of things that you notice. And so you don't know what it could be. It could be, something you saw in a store window as you passed by before.
A hammer.
Whatever it was. Yeah, exactly.
Do I want to hear your story?
Well, in the West Wing, when Josh was having PTSD, did I get it right?
Yes.
When he was suffering from PTSD after the attempted assassination of the president, I think it was music that was setting him off. So any kind of classical music.
A smell?
Yeah, sure. It can be a smell, right.
Is there a school of thought that kind of suggests that if you're constantly protecting yourself from something you're going to see on an almost daily basis,
right,
or hear,
yes,
or feel or smell, that you're not actually progressing and getting past it, all you're doing is making life more difficult for yourself and other people around you?
That's exactly how I see it.
Well, there's also a school of thought that the things that you try to avoid are the very things that you obsess about. I mean, there's plenty of literature on dieting, and how one of the reasons that dieting doesn't work is because it's restrictive. Because you're restricting yourself, and when you restrict yourself, you're focused on the thing that you can't have.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had an ex who said it's not possible to get over the eating issue she has, because you can get over drinking because it's possible to abstain from drinking. You can't abstain from eating. And
yeah,
I told her you could.
You can abstain from, sort of overeating, can't you?
That's the problem. No,
but,
I don't think you can. Not always. Not everyone
yourself,
can.
If you're telling yourself constantly, I can't have this, I can't have this, or I need to stop here,
it's all you can think about.
Exactly.
Yeah. It becomes your obsession.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anything, I've seen it happen.
Anything you're trying to avoid is going to stand out as well, because that's the thing which immediately grabs your attention, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. What were you saying earlier about the trigger warning for the trigger warning?
Oh, just I've seen some. I haven't encountered trigger warnings just reading blogs myself, but I tried to find examples, and I've noticed some that where people were putting trigger warnings because they were discussing whether there was a need for trigger warnings, or it was just like one sentence
Seriously?
That mentioned the word rape, and they put a trigger warning on that. It wasn't even like there was a graphic description of the event or anything like that. So I think it's gotten a little bit carried away, and I have to share this one. I saw an example of people providing trigger warnings on fertility forums, like before pregnancy announcements, because it would upset people. So this is the kind of thing where it's like...
That's because some people can't get pregnant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to warn them, we're going to talk about this thing that's plaguing you. That's what it's about.
Yeah, but then
how far do we go, though? I mean, where's the cutoff point? I mean, let's say there was an article about fruit that makes wine, and you want to put a warning up in case there's a spelling mistake and somebody hasn't put the G in front of the word, you know, on the word grape, and all of a sudden you're going to freak out. You know, if it's really as simple as seeing shapes on a page, seeing letters on a page, it's going to make you freak out, then really you just can't read or do anything ever again, can you? That's your life
that's
pretty
true.
Fucked.
And that's also assuming that it is the word rape that's triggering somebody, which
exactly.
We haven't even established. But one of the things that we noticed especially when Ani was trying to find examples of the way that these things are being used in online, all the stuff, all the 101s about, you know, triggers and so forth, how many of them were written by psychologists? None.
Yeah.
And they all cite other
Are you
blogs.
Saying that...
Yeah, they cite each other.
They cite each other as, you know,
it's
proof.
Pseudoscientific bullshit is what I'm saying.
In the skeptic community? How dare you say such a thing?
It didn't start in the skeptic community. They borrowed it from other places.
I guess that's true.
There now.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Are you telling me Rebecca Watson's not an expert?
I don't think you want me to go there.
I think I do. What were you going to say, Cole?
There's an Australian comedian called Steve Hughes.
He's brilliant.
You know Steve Hughes.
Oh, dude, one of my favorite bits by Steve Hughes is the
being offended?
The fag gay what the bit about how gay it is to be heterosexual.
Okay, yeah.
It's genius.
Well,
it's so brilliant.
If you like that, he's got a great bit about the nature of being offended. And it's about how they want to try and restrict certain words and stuff. But of course, being offended all depends on your upbringing, your conditioning, your religious beliefs, you know, what offends me might not offend you. And his bottom line was, what's wrong with being offended? Nothing happens. You know, it's not like, you know, a guy's going to say, oh, I went to the comedy show last night and a comedian did a joke about our Lord and I was offended and I woke up the next day and I had leprosy. You know, nothing happens. There's nothing wrong with being offended.
Steve Hughes is hilarious.
He is.
Why didn't we get him for the show?
Because he doesn't do this for free.
I know, right?
I'm desperate.
If he came over, he'd do the show for me.
I think he would.
He's a really funny cat. If you don't know who Steve Hughes is, YouTube him immediately. He's one of the best comics, I think, on the planet, actually.
I'll do one of his very, very quick. I'll do one of his short ones. He says, you know, when I came over from Australia, I was told if you've got an earring in your right ear, it means you're a homosexual, which is strange because in my country, it's when you've got your cock in another man's ass.
You can put the cock in a lot of places to be homosexual. It's not just the ass.
The
That's
ear.
A simplistic version of homosexuality. I would love to pontificate more on what we're talking about, but I can't because we have to take a break.
You're listening to Skeptically Yours on the GoCast Network, skepticallyyours.net, and available on the iTunes Store. More after this insufferable disruption.
Have you heard of our other award-winning podcast, Ardent Atheist? Well, you have now. Check it out. Go to www.ardentatheist.com. If you need to call your Craigslist hookup and tell them to get tested for AIDS, now's the time.
You're listening to the GoCast Network.
Hi, I'm Judy Kerr. Listen to Balancing Act on GoCast Network, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. It's all about acting and living your life in an artistic way. Music, too.
What's up, guys? This is Danny Trejo. And I want to tell you about the best restaurant in Southern California, The Second Floor in Huntington Beach. The Second Floor is a one-of-a-kind tattoo and cutting-edge art bar. The food is amazing. Try our Rockin' Nachos, the Sliders, or the Monster Colossal Burgers, or my favorite, at Trejo's Taco. Second floor. I'll see you there.
Hey, these are the Farley Brothers on Farley Brothers Radio. I'm Kevin Farley.
I'm John Farley.
I want you to go and look for Paranormal Movie on Amazon.com. It's out April 9th.
Yeah, it's a hilarious movie about a parody of the paranormal movies.
It's starring Maria Menounos, Tom Sizemore, Eric Roberts, John Farley, who plays Jack Goff.
Yeah. Nikki Whalen.
Nikki Whalen. It's an awesome movie. Go check it out on Amazon.com. April 9th, it's coming out. Type in Kevin Farley Paranormal Movie.
We're back on the GoCast Network.
And now back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with Cole Parker, Barbara Drescher, and Ani Aharonian.
Twice in a row.
I'm going to get it from now on. I got it. I can do this. God damn it.
Where's the name from? Can I ask?
It's Armenian.
Nice. All right.
Why do you have to pick on her like that?
Because she's Armenian. That's why.
We also have some guests in the studio that I want to mention while we're at it. We have Mr. Aharonian. God damn it. I can't do it unless it's in front of me.
We have Reza Siraji.
There we go. That's how you say it. I'm pretty sure. Is that also Armenian?
No, that's Persian.
There you go.
Talk about his shirt. That's a really cool shirt.
It's what I would have wanted.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
For those you can't see it.
Nice.
It's an angel pig.
Yes.
With a little angel wings and a halo. Smiling above a plate of crispy bacon. Yum, yum.
Yummers.
If I have to die, eat me. That's what it says.
Pretty much.
But anyway, we have guests. We don't always have guests. We also have Aaron Smith, Mr. Gadfly. You can find him at MrGadfly.com sitting here.
He's in the chat room, too.
He's live tweeting the show, isn't he? But thanks for being here. And listen, I dated a girl who, from the get-go, said that she had borderline personality disorder. And I interacted with her on the internet for a long time. I went on one date with her. One.
She wasn't joking, was she?
She was not fucking around, dude. I got to know her pretty well on the internet. I was really curious about how this condition manifests in person. And she was sexy as fuck. And the crazy ones
always are.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Great in bed, but a bit clingy.
I didn't even get in bed with her. I didn't get in bed with her. But at the end of the day, she had every inch of this condition. It was beyond acceptable. Unacceptable, rather. Beyond unacceptable. What I discovered in literally one night of hanging out with this girl is that, and this is my interpretation, just for the record, and you guys are pros on this. I'm sure you know a lot about border. Do you know anything about borderline personality?
Yeah. I've known a few borderline personalities myself.
Do you know about it,
yeah.
Cole?
Yeah.
Okay. I went on a date, and at every possible opportunity, all of the issues in this girl's world were utilized to manipulate and control every aspect, every moment of her existence and everyone around her, including our waiter, including the guy at the bar, every fucking person that came in contact with her. She was using this world she had built around her to control people. And I couldn't possibly have dropped her off and gotten the fuck out of there fast enough.
Give us an example.
Well, first of all, she has... she told me going in, there was a movie about this. That girl has one drink and she turns into this thing.
Blind Date.
Blind Date was it, right. She told me, she goes, I cannot drink. If I drink, I will lose my fucking mind and it will not go well. And I said, I don't drink. There's no problem. And
she had a drink.
Oh, 20 minutes in. 20 fucking minutes in. She goes, well, I meant I couldn't overdrink. So then she starts telling me, she starts re-qualifying what she's told me. She goes, I can have one wine. And she couldn't have half a fucking wine. Within truly halfway through that wine, she started saying that she was panicked about her three or two, I can't remember how many.
Cats?
No.
Oh.
Children.
What's the biggest dog? Great Danes. That are sitting at home without her, and she can't go anywhere without these dogs, and she shouldn't have gone on this date, and what was she thinking, and blah, blah, blah. It was really nuts. And I said, let's finish dinner, and let's go home, to the. We stopped dinner. We put it in a box, and I drove her back to make sure her dogs, which were fine, were fine. And that was one thing. And she, it was all about her dogs.
Probably pleased to have her out of the house for a couple of hours, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah, they were. They were pissed off we got back so early. Yeah. But it was really, really crazy talk. I mean, just fucking psychotic. I have personal experience with this kind of thing. My sister and I, and this has come up many times on our show, I'm not going to belabor the details too much. We were both molested by the same uncle. Her reaction to that molestation is very much like what I'm describing here. Everything that is mentioned, and I'm not mentioning her name for obvious reasons. I'm not going to give out my sister's name.
Carol, Lucy.
No, don't. Now you've just narrowed it down to two knots.
Oscar, she's here.
Oh, what's your name? But she really does suffer daily, and the people around her suffer daily from this narcissistic, psychotic behavior. It's dishonest, a lot of dishonesty. At one point, she had been molested by my uncle, as had I. Now, the list just grows and grows and grows. Every man in her life has raped or molested her in some way. She and I have fallen estranged. We're not interacting at all anymore, and I couldn't be happier. And she uses me to control her sons. One of her sons is an atheist and talks about atheism. And she went and listened to some of my atheist shows, and then all of a sudden is telling her son that he's not to talk anything about atheism because it's just continuing the cycle of abuse to her.
So that's like a trigger warning.
She's doing. That's what she's doing, and it really is a manipulative construct. It's designed and used. I don't think consciously. I really don't. I think all of this stuff happens over a long period of awful dysfunction. But it's part of my world, and it's awful. It's fucking insidious, and I don't know what to do other than just not have contact with people like that. But that's narcissists. Behavior too, right?
Well, narcissism is a personality trait.
Okay.
So everybody is on some, you know, they land somewhere in the continuum from, you know, highly narcissistic to not narcissistic at all. So we're all somewhere in there, right?
Yeah.
But when it reaches a level at which it interferes with somebody's ability to function, they may not be bothered by it, but the people around them do. That's when we call it a disorder. That's when it becomes a clinical problem, right? Yeah,
that's interesting. And on a scale of 1 to 10, where am I?
It actually goes. It actually goes up to 30, doesn't it?
You're not joking, are you?
It depends on the test. Yeah.
I took the test online a couple of years ago. I did.
One of the best narcissists, but it's a personality test. So it scoring high on it doesn't mean you're a narcissist.
Yeah.
No. What makes him a narcissist is he took the test.
Thinks we give a shit, right?
Right.
Of course you give a shit. No, I was forced to. I was dating a girl over here who was mental. I think that's like it's the same with anyone. I hope I'm not overstretching my boundaries here, but I think you can compare it to when women live together and they start the cycles start synchronizing.
That's a false thing. It doesn't happen.
So if you okay.
I'm just going.
So if you live with somebody who or dating somebody who is a bit sort of crazy, and after a while you start accepting their behavior, then you'll start assimilating and you'll become a little bit kind of crazy.
Oh, I think that happens.
And anyway, she was a bit crazy. She was addicted to a lot of prescription drugs and stuff, mm-hmm. and she had quite a wayward career. We'll call it a career.
Are we talking about an actress? Because if you got involved with an actress...
She wasn't. No. She was vaginal rental. Let's just call it that.
Nice.
Yeah. She called it a court. She told me she was a courtesan. She told me she was a
escort,
a makeup artist to start with. She said, "Oh, I'm a courtesan." I thought, nice cover story. You both give facials. Good.
One gives, one takes.
Well, anyway, she, long story short, she said, "I've got NPD." And
NPD?
Narcissistic personality disorder.
Okay.
And so she made me take this online test. And it's if you score over a certain amount, you fall into disorder, apparently.
Okay.
And so during the test, I was lying like a motherfucker. And so I was And so I came out and going, ha-ha, see, only got a 13. She's, I know you lied. I fucking know you. And then it was only about a year later I met up with another ex-girlfriend who said, by the way, I don't know if you know this, but you might want to test yourself for NPD because I think you've got it. And I thought, that's two people, surely. They might be right.
Right.
Narcissism is a personality trait, right? So scoring high in it does not mean you have NPD.
Does not mean it's a disorder.
It does not mean it's a disorder. Okay, yeah. It means you are high in narcissism, which is a trait, right? So NPD is a disorder that has narcissistic personality as a major central feature of it, right? And narcissism is actually a central feature in a lot of disorders. It can be in borderline, although borderline is kind of called borderline because it's sort of a mixed bag of weirdness.
Yeah.
But it's also it's highly, you reach a certain point with narcissism and you're psychopathic.
Oh, wow.
So really what narcissism is high narcissism in the personality trait and lack of empathy, lack of regard for others. So narcissists, people with NPD have a neutral or a negative regard for others. And to me, what I see, because narcissism is on the rise, as a personality trait is on the rise in our society. The last 30 years have shown, there's plenty of research to show, and it's pretty good research.
Is it on the rise or is it being diagnosed more effectively?
No, we're not talking about NPD. We're talking about narcissism, the personality.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Is that all about social
conditioning? NPD is also on the rise, but that could also be because we're identifying it more. But the trait itself is on the rise, and you can see it in our community. I mean, we have a narcissistic culture today that's insane. But what I see is not just these people that are highly narcissistic. It's not that they don't like other people. It's they literally don't process other people. They don't see them as human beings. They think they do, but they don't quite process them the same way. And it's hard to explain and understand, because if you don't think that way, you can't.
It's hard.
Even if you do think that way, they don't even realize that they think that way.
Yeah.
Like I was thinking about it today. I was thinking about we were talking about the case of the rape conviction that just came down, and
yeah,
these teenagers who don't understand why what they did was wrong, much less that it was rape. They literally aren't even thinking about the victim, aren't even processing the concept that they could do something wrong, that they weren't justified.
So we're moving in the wrong direction.
Yes, we are moving in the wrong direction. And it's harmful to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, you read something today that really disturbed me. Do you remember what it was?
No, remind me.
Somebody
read a lot of things that were disturbing today.
That's true. I know. I'm typing at her, just
what
going,
you doing
oh
your spare
God.
Time.
I was Googling trigger warnings. I saw a lot of things.
She said she read something where somebody actually said that they couldn't get on board with the concept that narcissism was a failure. You know, that was a trait that wasn't positive. And there are lots of people who think that way.
Uh-huh.
And it's so disturbing.
I think there's probably evidence to suggest that might be right in some cases, though, because I think there's a lot of celebrities who have got like a touch of brilliance to them, like whether they're musicians or actors, but they couldn't be what they are without having that kind of disorder.
Well, that's what I was going to point out about you, Cole. I mean, you get on... Listen, as a comic, mm-hmm. you and I are both comics. You actually make calls. And you book gigs, and you ask people to, A, pay you money, and, B, get a bunch of people to come out and stand and watch you talk with a microphone in your hand and lights on your... Of course you have a narcissistic bent.
That's just confidence. There's
Zingerman,
a difference.
Zingerman on the chat says, aren't a lot of comedians narcissistic by
Well, I mean,
nature?
Aren't all performers in some way, me and you both, in some way, like
Russell
that? Am I
Brand
wrong?
Discuss.
Yes, you're wrong.
Russell Brand, discuss.
Yeah. The difference is not, it's not narcissism, it's high self-esteem. There's a big difference. We are so narcissistic today because we're so freaking concerned with our child's precious self-esteem. We, first of all, we just assume that they need high self-esteem, which is very questionable. But we're so concerned with harming that self-esteem that what we've created isn't self-esteem. It's narcissism. There's a difference. Self-esteem is something that you get from your own accomplishments. Confidence is something that you exude, right?
Right.
But it doesn't equate to narcissism. Narcissism is such self-absorption. It's not necessarily vanity. It's not necessarily self-promotion. So it can be.
You're talking about those toddlers and tiaras.
Yes. I use that as an example.
Okay.
When I talk about it.
More about that right after this. You're listening to Skeptically Yours on the GoCast Network, skepticallyyours.net, and available at the iTunes Store. More after this intolerable intermission. And now a special announcement.
This is a big super shout out to the listeners. Kyle Delaney, Danielle Lucas, Herbie, the Zen Atheist Reagan, Zingaman, Cameron Winters, and Joe Swam. These were the screen names of the people chatting in the skeptic tank last week. Thanks for being there, everybody.
And now back to Skeptically Yours, where thinking is free. We're talking with Cole Parker, Barbara Drescher, and Ani Aharonian.
It's just keeps getting.
I stumbled on the O. Aharonian. It's not that hard. It's exactly like it looks on paper.
It's just intimidating when you look at it.
Aharonian.
Yeah.
There's probably a roll that's supposed to happen in there, right? Aharonian or something? Or
Aharonian.
Supposed to get your tongue caught in your nose?
Aharonian.
That's easy. Cool. So, anyway, we're back with her. But
thanks, Andy. Do you think.
And by the way, thanks for being here short notice.
Thank you.
Really
for
appreciate
having me.
That. Cole?
Do you think that narcissistic traits can also be geographic? For example, we're here in Hollywood, where, you know, everybody walks down the street like they're in a movie already. You know, there's so much swagger. They spend hours in the gym. There's all these beautiful sculpted people. And you go to somewhere like, you know, for example, a backwater of Poland, for example, people might not be quite so proud or confident or even, you know, sort of thinking about what other people think of them. So a lot of it's going to also depend on where you are, what you do. And
bubble perspective.
Know. Yeah, yeah.
What do you think?
Well, we have a narcissistic culture. So it encourages narcissism. I mean, narcissism as a personality trait isn't very changeable, but it is. It depends. I mean, it depends on if you're developing, you know, as this self-absorbed person. It's probably not going to be something you can change as an adult. But adults, there's actually evidence that adults have literally become more narcissistic over the last couple of decades than they were before.
What kind of evidence are we talking about?
Research. I mean, like, there are experimentation, there's surveys, there's all sorts of inventories and things like that that have been tested and, you know, shown to be reliable. And we use those and we correlate them with things like age and so forth.
A lot of that's got to be due to the aspirational, the way the media kind of portrays people, isn't it? So everybody's like, you know, made to look beautiful. Sex is used to sell absolutely everything, you know, from coffee to cars. And so people are sort of, you know, they feel they have to be beautiful, they have to be great, they have to be this, because, you know, you look at soap operas and you look at sitcoms, like nearly everybody in them is beautiful. And if they're not, they're generally comedy relief. And
I don't even think it's necessarily beauty. People see themselves as beautiful, whether they are or not. It's more fame.
Yeah, but
it's
somebody needs to tell them.
Somebody needs to buy them a mirror that actually works.
You know, when you start watching someone like Jerry Springer and somebody like 400 pounds going, I'm beautiful. And are you really?
Are you really?
But they were told that their whole lives, so they can't process anything else.
That's your complaint, isn't it? I mean, we're raising these kids. They can't paint. They can't dance. A lot of kids can't do these things.
They can't read.
Roger that. But their parents are telling them that what they're doing is perfect and amazing and phenomenal. They're making the mistake of teaching the children when they fail that what they're doing is not failing, and therefore they're creating this narcissistic thinking rather than saying, no, you're not fucking good at that. Let's just be clear on this.
Well,
you are good at A, B, and C, but D through Z, you are fucking shitty, so stick to these other three
things. Grew up, that was called self-preservation because you didn't want to get picked on, so you had to give yourself airs and make yourself seem smarter.
Swagger.
Yeah, swagger, in order not to get picked on, beat up, or something like that. So,
where are you from?
I'm from New Jersey.
But, okay. But what you're talking about isn't narcissism. What you're talking about is an act that somebody puts on, right? But you look at...
It becomes narcissism when that act is believed.
Well, when they're doing it not because they want to appear to be more confident, but because they feel entitled to be that way.
Right.
And that's where bullying comes from. I mean, we spent, you know, a decade and a half trying to improve the situation with bullies by trying to raise bullies' self-esteem because we wrongly assumed that bullies were just covering up for low self-esteem.
Oops.
Bullshit. They're entitled jerks who feel like they should be allowed to do what they're doing.
Well, listen,
justified in doing what they're
doing. I'm 49 years old, and the bully that put me into a locker when I was a kid got in touch with me on Facebook, and I'll never forget the moment when I was standing there with my finger over the accept, don't accept button going, what the fuck do I do? And it took me, honestly, it took me 3 to 4 minutes before I went, oh, who cares, accept. And I let the bully that I remember the most from my childhood become friends with me. Turns out he's an atheist, lives in Kansas City now, still rather. And I'll tell you what, you want to knock
him. Are you sure it's not Minnesota?
No, I grew up in Kansas City. That bully is a wonderful, normal, average dude today. And nothing will stop a bully from being a bully like the reality of one's Midwestern miserable life.
Well, that's another thing is this idea that, you know, narcissism is this trait that is always beneficial. Narcissists are overconfident, not highly confident, overconfident. And so because they get their self-esteem, they don't get their self-esteem from accomplishments, they get their self-esteem from being told that they're great, right?
Right.
So what they do is take more risks. Sometimes those risks pay off. So what we see are successful narcissists. The confirmation bias takes over, and what we don't see are all the narcissists who are running around trying to manipulate other
people.
They're
on American Idol, try it.
She nailed it. Yeah.
I mean, it must all depend, you know, differ from person to person, because sometimes it's going to be a defense mechanism, or it's going to be compensation for, you know, for very, very low self-esteem.
Then it's not narcissism.
It isn't. Okay. but it might, you know, it might convey its narcissism to someone.
It might appear that way, yeah. But I think that people get a little confused about the difference between vanity and narcissism.
What if you got both?
You're a narcissist. Vanity can be a feature of narcissism, but
you're
it doesn't
vain
make
narcissist.
Yes, you're a vain narcissist.
Yeah, but at least
there
it's
are
the
different
title.
Types. Yes. We need a little crown for you.
Yeah,
a little dunce cap. Thing.
You're kind of taking some of this personal, I think, Cole, aren't you?
No, I'm enjoying it.
You're worried. Yeah. You're worried. You're a pretty man.
Sorry?
You're a very attractive man.
Really? Well, that's very kind of you to say so.
And for the record, a lot of people don't know this about Cole, but his accent is really an affectation. He grew up in Georgia.
So, that's you know
I think
what?
That's why they're calling you a narcissist.
You think so? That's the name of my daughter. So saying I grew up in her
is really
a little bit odd. Yeah.
Georgia, did I nail? Did I? I didn't mean to say did I nail your daughter, but did I really nail the name of your daughter in that joke?
Yeah, can you not use the word nail as well?
Trigger warning.
How old is your daughter?
She was 12 2 weeks ago today.
What? How old are you?
Look
how
at you.
Yeah, how old are you?
Yeah,
my stage age is 33.
Bringing us right back to what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Again, that's vanity. That's not narcissism. That's
well, just, I don't know. It's vanity. Business sense in this town, isn't it?
Yeah, no. Well, I don't know. I don't buy that, by the way. I do not buy it.
You don't?
No,
buy
I don't. I listen, what we can play, it always is decided in the process of not interviewing when we audition. In the audition process, it really doesn't matter on the page, in my opinion. What matters on the page is the agent. That's all that matters. Get a good agent, get a good manager, and fuck that. Tell the truth about your age. And the other truth is, the other fact is, this town is filled with work for every age.
Yeah.
It's just nutty filled with it. So
that's why I'm keeping my hopes up.
What are you talking about? Look at how nobody guesses your age. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm not auditioning right now.
Yeah, you're going to, though.
I'm hoping that by the time I can get back to auditioning, you know, there still will be work for my age.
There's always work, no matter what age.
Yeah.
It's constant. This town, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is less work for 40-somethings than there is for 20-somethings. Is that maybe
accurate?
It depends
on what kind of work you want.
Facials.
No.
No?
So that was just me receiving one then.
So
on that note,
I had a couple conversations today about narcissistic disorder and borderline personality, and I want to make sure. I think we spoke to that, but I want to make sure we hit that. They're not the same. There's an overlap. There's a Venn diagram going on there. What's the story there?
Well. You want to?
I don't even know. I think borderlines are kind of all over the place. I don't know that it's necessarily a feature.
It can be a feature. Borderline is, there's a certain set of criteria, or at least until the new DSM comes out, which
DSM.
DSM the diagnostic manual, which I don't know if anybody's going to use the one, new one, but in the current diagnostic manual, what you have for every disorder is a set of criteria. If you meet that criteria, you get a diagnosis. Okay. Everything's on a continuum, though, and everything kind of overlaps. And all really a diagnosis is a label for a set of symptoms.
Yeah. Like
That's
being
really
gay.
All it is.
Like being gay?
Well, if it's disorderly, yeah. If it's just, I mean, if
it's easier to test for, I'll tell you that.
I've got gay disorder.
I got the gay disorder.
I don't think the gay community would be too keen on that, would they?
And they're not when the Republicans talk like that.
It did used to be in the DSM because they had difficulty functioning and people thought that was an abnormal thing. So that's
when the problem was society, not the... not the lifestyle.
But, you know, it's kind of a misnomer. I mean, a lot of people complain about the labels that psychologists, you know, put on people. And the truth is that label's really just to label a set of symptoms. Yeah. It's just so that we can communicate a set of symptoms.
Well, I have a friend whose name will remain out of this discussion.
Bob, Joe.
Why do you do that?
Just ask him. He's here as well. He's next to your sister.
What's your name, Joe Bob? I have a friend who has suffered with psychological disorders his whole life. Mm-hmm. And he's been very careful not to end up labeled because he's convinced and has seen it himself in others that once they label him with what he knows they would label him with, which I think is schizophrenia, once they label him with that, he's convinced two things will happen. The health system will treat him like a disposable, and it will affect how he views himself as well, I think. He's really worried about it. And I'm not sure he's wrong. What do you think?
Well, before we continue on, I think we need to wrap up.
What?
Yeah.
It's No. We don't, because we started 2 or 3 minutes late.
Okay, fine. Ignore me.
You know,
in 2 minutes, give us a warning.
Not anymore.
I have to say that any opinion that Ani and I give is purely from not much more than an undergraduate education in psychology, because we're cognitive psychologists, not clinical psychologists. That said, it's an area of interest of mine. And if he thinks that it's going to change the way he views himself, then he should not change the way he views himself. But then again, getting a diagnosis also means getting the right treatment. And schizophrenia, we are much, much better at treating.
Are we?
Yes. Huh. Hell yes.
A lot
much
of the,
better.
Most of the cases they're able to treat with medication now, right? I mean, it's not.
Yet. There's a million medications.
I know one kid who was diagnosed and treated, and they've done nothing to fix him whatsoever.
Is it schizophrenia?
Yeah, it's severe schizophrenia. He's a black guy. He's a black guy. And one day I was driving him to a place where he needed to get some ID or something, and it was a long drive from Kansas City to Topeka when they lived there, and he's a comic and. For the first time ever, he and I kind of connected, and he got to telling me about his disorder and about everything that he suffers from, and he opened up and told me everything. And he hears voices, everybody who goes past him. Now, they did give him medication that stopped the voices from happening. That's true, no question. He is not functional anymore. He sends out emails to me and many other people all the time. You know the guy standing on the street corner that's screaming, "I'm telling you, I invented the cell phone. The government owes me $500 million." He's not that bad. He's had some business college, just enough to be dangerous. But he's putting out these proposals that are going to save the world and feed the world. They're not functional. When you read them, and I've called him, and I've said, dude, this is not working. You're not even thinking about overhead. McDonald's, yeah, they make fucking sandwiches for 13 cents each. Yes, they do. It's not that simple. There's people paid to make those sandwiches. Then they have a building, and you can't just ship McDonald's hamburgers to Africa.
Emery, calm down. You sound like him. Come on. Put your clothes back on.
But anyway, listen, you're right. There are medications, and I know that they put him on a medication, and he did control the voices. And it's the most awful thing you can imagine. What he hears, he thought for years was he was hearing our thoughts. And it's everybody calling him a nigger.
Now, wouldn't that...
That's what he hears.
If you put your... I used to, when I would teach this, you know, in intro classes, it occurred to me that if I heard voices all the time for years on end, I go a little crazy myself.
Yeah.
I always feel the opposite. I feel like if I heard voices there's enough information out there that would suggest to me that I would figure it out. And I'd go, oh, that's an interesting trait. I got a spare arm. What am I going to do with it? I'm never going to put any stock in it. I always thought that about Son of Sam when the dog told him to kill someone. I'm like, if the dog tells you to kill someone, get a new dog first. Try that. Because that dog's giving you shitty advice. And if you can't figure that out, you got fucking problems.
There are functional schizophrenics. I mean, look at John
there
Nash.
Right. There are good examples of that. All right, listen. That's it for the free version of episode 30. Another show that went off without a hitch. We miss you, Hitch. We'll be making the full 90 minutes available to our premium subscribers later tonight. If you'd like to hear the full 90-minute show, please go to skepticallyyours.net/premium and subscribe. I want to thank our guest Cole Parker, Barbara Dreschkirk, and Ani Aharonian. See what I did there? I fucked up your name and I just... Okay! I also want to thank my co-host, Heather Henderglog.
That's not me.
Tune in next week when our guest will be...
Another group of geniuses, or is it genii?
And we'll be talking about...
I'm not psychic, damn it. Thanks to our audio engineers, Dick Spenneberg and Jansen Lefevre. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to our Skeptic Tank moderator, Joseph Triggerbreaker Swam, and our digital publicist and web guru, Cameron Triggermaker Winters.
You've been listening to Skeptically Yours on skepticallyyours.net. I'm your host, Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson.
And we are Skeptically Yours. Skeptically Yours is a product of an ever-expanding universe.